everybody. It's Jeff Dunham along with my buddies Matt McNeil and Jeff Rothpan. And here we are for episode number, what is it, Matt? 98?
Oh, you put me on the spot. I think we're number 8 now.
8. All right. I'm going to go with 98. That's what it is. Number 98. Jeff, what is the deal with the thing on your head?
Oh, to be honest, I forgot. I was outside with the dog, just picking up after, and it's pretty bright out, and I just put him up and totally forgot. So I don't know if it's an... I guess I could take them off.
If you lose your glasses later, they're on your head.
Right. Yeah, but I walked around, but they've been on there for like 20 minutes. I didn't realize I didn't take them off again. So
why isn't there an emoji with the sunglasses on their head? There's the cool guy with the sunglasses on, but there's no emoji of it just on his head. It looked like you.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But I picked them that way when I come in and out of the house and stuff like that. And, usually I'll know where they are. I did forget to take them off, but...
It's funny. I have a hard time getting my glasses to stay on my head. Is it my head shape?
You're a cone head. You have pointy head.
You have more hair, I guess. I don't know.
No, you would think that yours would just like slip right off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are tighter. And these are the sunglasses that actually can come with some reading at the bottom.
Oh.
Like, you can buy them at Costco. Are we allowed to say that?
How did we get off on this tangent?
Sorry, what are we talking about?
You know, I was watching, I think it was Morton Downey Jr. on Joe Rogan, and I think it was just a clip, so they joined it in the middle of the conversation.
Not Morton Downey Jr.
What did I say? Robert Downey Jr.
There's a blast in the past.
Wow.
I wondered in the comments, if anybody remembers Morton Downey Jr., please write in the comments.
That's it. I've completely lost it. I'm gone. All right. So Robert Downey. Come up with that?
Morton Downey Jr. I actually saw Morton Downey Jr. live. He did a tour back in the 80s.
Oh my gosh. All right, let me start over. Okay, rewind. There we go. So I was watching Robert Downey Jr. and Joe Rogan, and Robert Downey Jr., they were talking about eyesight, and he was talking about his number sevens and number fours. Were they talking about glasses that you buy at the store for magnification? Is that what they were talking about? Like you go to the drugstore?
Oh, yeah, they have that little stand where you don't need, like, graduated lenses, Jeff?
No.
Reed, do you have like vision stuff?
No, but what I'm saying is, did Robert Downey Jr., does he go to whatever, Walgreens and buy the crappy glasses?
Yeah. I mean, I do because I lose them. What? But I have one good pair.
Okay, but he's a multi, probably almost a That's billionaire. Why can't he just get a prescription and buy 30 of them and have each place that he sits in the house? Right. Instead of the crappy ones that make your eyes worse.
Yeah, you would think point. Iron Man would have a better plan for vision.
Yeah. That's another thing. Yeah,
some of those store ones are ugly.
Well, that's another thing. David Koresh, there's a transition.
David Koresh? Warren Downey Jr., David Koresh.
Yeah. Wow.
This is a rogues gallery here.
I don't feel so bad that I left these on my head for 20 minutes.
But Waco, what was the name of the group, David Koresh's group?
The Branch Davidians.
The Branch Davidians. Oh, wow. Yeah, my buddy Gary Brightwell used to do a great bit about how David Koresh claimed that he was God's son. Remember that? Or something to that effect? Yeah. And he had on these giant Coke bottle glasses, these really thick glasses. And Gary was like, if you're God's son, don't you think Pop would have fixed your peepers?
That's great.
So, I don't know. Yeah, Morton Downey Jr. What conversation has those two names within 2 minutes of each other?
Oh, wow.
I don't know if anybody's had a discussion about Morton Downey Jr. since 92.
Wow. How'd we bring all that together?
I have no idea. All right, I'll add another name to make it weirder. I was doing a press interview this morning for a casino I'm doing up in Washington State in July. And the guy, they had me on, you're on hold listening to the commercials while you're waiting for your spot to come up. It was a TV interview, and the guy, he said something to the effect of, "Yeah, the sunshine today, sunshine on your shoulders." And I went, You actually did a John Denver reference.
Wow.
That maybe a fifth of your audience got.
Maybe a fifth. I mean, that's way out there.
At least my Morton Downey Jr. was a mistake.
Right. Yeah, you met that other Downey.
I did, and they're not related, right? Morton and Robert Downey.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Juniors. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't fix. All right. I
wonder if they were related, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're here for another reason. We have an interview, my podcast coming up, my interview with Joe Coy. And gentlemen, as we talked about a little earlier, this is going to be my first interview that I will have done, having not done it before talking to you guys. So I have no idea how this interview went.
Me either.
I assume it went well, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. He can be a complete a-hole, but I don't think so.
It's funny. I've seen him quite a bit, in advance of this or whatever, and he just sort of seems like a really like down to earth guy, because everything for him seems to be about family, and mm-hmm. It just sort of seems like all of his comedy comes from a really good place.
Yeah. And he's another guy like Russell Peters, that he's this international star that people all over the country, all over the world love him. And he has these great audiences and plays too. And you can see it in the videos, the Netflix specials and all that. And mm-hmm. It's another amazing story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's amazing. I did see him. The first time I noticed him was I was at a comedy festival, and the show was not going well before he was on stage. But as soon as he hit the stage, there were other comedians before him that just weren't doing that well. And the audience seemed kind of bored and not into the show. And this guy is somebody to watch. He's amazing to watch on stage. Just so much passion, energy, and really funny. So,
yeah, and he's another one like Fluffy and all these guys that we've been talking to that is very likable on stage. You'd want to sit down and have a drink with the guy and chat with him. So that's what I'll be doing in just a little bit.
Yeah. It seems to me also that, like, because his comedy is so sort of like life-centric to him, like his specific life, but he makes it so universal that I think that even though he's talking about very specific nationalities and things like that, but it somehow transcends that and becomes like a universal thing. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's so popular.
Yeah, it's universal subjects. And that's the way I was able to make my world tour work, is that we just, and Jeff and I, when we were working on it, we just chose subjects that everybody could relate to, the family and job and putting food on the table and the economy and, spouses. Yep. So those subjects
for
all
everybody.
Work. Yeah. And he's always talking about, Joe Coy's always talking about his mother. And even though she, like you said, Matt, very specific about that particular woman and some of her idiosyncrasies and things that make her funny, it's still mom. So many people can relate to that.
Cool.
Yep. All right.
And plus, if you don't know him, you want to see a guy with the name Joe Coy. You just have to be curious.
Jeff, because you haven't done the interview yet, you got to ask him about his name. He's got a bit about it, which is, I'm assuming, a true story as well, that is really, because Joe Coy is not his name.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm always a little hesitant to ask celebrities about their real names, because they change their names for a reason. But he does. He writes about it in his book, and he does have a bit about it. He talks in other press about how he got that name, so it's not a big secret. But I am a little nervous every once in a while when somebody has another name. It's like, do you want to bring that up? And also, I was wondering this the other day. At what point in your career do you say, my name is, whatever it is, Biff Cunningham, and it's not a thing. I need to change it,
Yeah.
To Armstrong.
Right.
Biff Armstrong?
Yeah.
Armstrong Cunningham, which one is it? Right.
Armstrong Steele. I'm Armstrong Steele now. I don't want to be Jeff Dunham. I'm Armstrong Steele.
Did you ever think about changing your name?
It was too late. That's what I'm saying. At what point in my career, I'm doing Cub Scout banquets in the fourth grade, and I'm like, well, I'm known now. I can't change my name now. I'm famous in my elementary.
You're famous with Pac 402. You can't change
name Pac 580. Pac 585. Yeah, I can't change my name now because all the kids know who I am. But seriously, I mean, what is it? Is it the agent? Is it the manager? Or the artist themselves who goes, I can't get famous with this name. I got to change
right,
it.
Right.
Well, you gotta ask Joe Coy about this because he's got
at least
really
he talks about it.
Funny.
I think.
Yeah, and he's very candid about it. It's really, really a good story.
So now what's going to happen is when I talk to him, I'll be, instead of talking to you guys about the interview, I'll be talking to Joe Coy about the introduction that we are just now doing.
Right. Yeah, where do you see that introduction? We talked about Morton Downey Jr. and David Koresh.
And John Denver. And you're in all of it.
All right.
All right. Well, let's move on here, and we'll talk to everybody afterwards. And I don't know who we're gonna see with character wise when we come back, because we always show a clip and do something. I think it might be Walter, Matt, because I loved my idea of what we should show after this.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. All right. Thanks, all right, guys, and we'll see you after the interview. Here we go.
Sounds good.
All right.
My guest today is a stand-up comic who sells out huge venues all over the planet. So many accolades, I didn't know which ones to pick. This one I love. In 2017, Joe Coy broke a record for the most tickets sold by a single artist at 23,000 tickets. 23,000 tickets and 11 sold-out shows at the Neil S. Blaisdell Concert Hall in Honolulu. He's had 4 specials on Comedy Central and Netflix. He has his weekly podcast, The Coy Pond. He has appeared on over 140 episodes of Chelsea Lately as a season regular roundtable guest. And his first book, Mixed Plate, Chronicles of an All-American Combo, has just come out. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome to my right, Mr. Joe Coy. Joe, how are you?
Yes. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great. So before we start here, I must say that I apologize that I canceled on you the first time we were going to do this interview because I had just gotten my shot, my vaccination for COVID. And I got the Johnson & Johnson one. And by the way, that was a great headline to wake up to the other day when it's like, oh, yeah, everybody's having strokes. That's great.
I saw that.
Yeah. But I had the next day and I didn't feel terrible, but I didn't feel on top of my game. And I wanted this interview to go great. So I canceled on you and I apologize for that.
No, don't apologize. A lot of people were going through that on that particular shot. It's heavy, I heard.
Well, I don't know. It wasn't bad. I wanted to feel right. I didn't want to be thinking about how I felt instead of thinking about you. But then we scheduled it right there in that phone call, Joy, to Joe, to have this thing happen a few days later. And then you went, and the message I got from somebody who worked for me was, Joe canceled on you. I'm like, what? what? And that's all I got. There was no why, no reason. It's just we're gonna try and reschedule. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? How did I piss him off? I thought we had a nice conversation. I thought he was, oh, this is so sad.
can I explain why?
Yeah, go ahead. I was gonna tell, but you tell. This is awesome.
Okay, so I'm shooting this movie in Vancouver, Canada right now, and I'm missing my son's birthday. His birthday is April 21st. Right. I was scheduled to leave for Vancouver April 11th. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, I have to do something for my son for his birthday. So I, literally, when I got off the phone with you, I came up with this idea that I would just rent a tour bus because we both love aliens. And I wanted to do like this.
Wait a minute. You and your son both love aliens?
We love aliens. We love the whole thing of like trying to find an alien.
That's great. Okay, we have another thing in common. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, so I want to do this whole tour of like the Grand Canyon and Sedona and go see, you know, sit in the vortex and like go to Roswell and see if we can catch an alien live. We went to the White Sands and, you know, all these like mysterious like landmarks, you know, like these really cool areas to go visit. And I literally, in one day, his mommy, my ex-wife, she came up with this whole idea and knocking this little mini tour out with my son and all of his cousins. And it was the best time ever, man.
Okay, so it was cousins, not just friends.
No, it was all my son's cousins.
Okay, because my wife and I were talking about this, and after you explained it to me, because I texted you and like, man, what happened? You explained, we got on the phone, you explained it to me. And it was like, then I was talking to Audrey, my wife, and I'm like, you said, I thought you said friends, a bunch of friends, your son and a bunch of his friends. And I'm like, hang on a second. How well do they know Joe Coy that they're just going to let their son jump on a tour bus with this dude and travel across the country? And what? How does this work? I don't know if I do this as a parent. But okay, so it's cousins, so they know you pretty well.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, Jeff, is I take all these cousins, because they're all right around the same age, right?
Right.
And I took all of them. You know, I take them everywhere. I take them to Hawaii. I take them on like big elaborate vacations. And then this one is their favorite one, hands down. This one they can't stop talking about.
Well, I have to admit, I watched a couple of the videos and it looked great. It looked really fun. But I got to tell you, so you went to the Grand Canyon and you flew a drone over the Grand Canyon. I think I'm not wrong here. That's really illegal.
Yeah, that was very illegal. I swear, Jeff, I only flew a little bit out and I came right back.
Oh yeah, only a little bit. I broke the law just a little bit. So I got to tell you a story. So in 2000 and I think it was 13 when drones were becoming big, I had flown radio controlled helicopters for years. So once you've flown a radio controlled helicopter, a drone is easy because a drone will stay level and it won't crash, right? You can crash it into things, but if you just let go of the controls, it'll just sit there. So to me, flying them was a piece of cake. So we were in, I put this whole package together. We're going on the world tour and I flew this thing around all over the world, getting all kinds of shots from my special. It was a Comedy Central special, but the best one was in South Africa. We're on in a hotel that was, you know, I think we were on like the 50th floor or some crazy place, and a little window. And I said, I think, in a pretty big suite, I said, I think I can take this off in the suite and fly it out the window.
Did you do it?
Yeah, I did it. And then the crazy part was it was a new feature where it would, you know, it could return itself if it lost signal. So I just pushed both sticks forward and said, fly, mother ever. And it just flew out. Yeah, it just disappeared off into the sunset with the camera going. And then a few minutes later, the camera comes back on and it's flying back to me. Towards a tiny window in the side of this giant hotel with people below dining.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Yeah. And I, you know, and it wasn't, everything wasn't automatic. I had to fly the thing through that tiny window and we landed it on the floor. I got the whole thing, but yeah, no one was killed.
Oh God.
So
I want to know just how many drones and GoPros are inside whales' bodies right now.
Oh,
my son's GoPro, two of my son's GoPros in the ocean right away. The minute he bought it, in the ocean. So I'm pretty sure that's inside of a whale. And then my camera guy, we were in Australia. He was like, oh, I got this great shot idea. We had to go buy this drone. And we're sitting on on this boat. And we're all waving to it as it takes off into the ocean. And then it just nosedives into the ocean. You can actually see us like, no! funniest thing. It's the best footage in the world.
Oh, well, you got it back?
No, because, you know, it's on the hard drive. It's on the hard drive. So you see it like waving.
So it was playing. Yeah. All right. So you were recording. You were recording it remotely, not just on the GoPro. I got it. Wow. Yeah. That's pretty darn funny. You know, speaking of aliens, they're going to come back and find all that stuff and think, what are these idiots?
Oh, for sure.
What are these idiots doing? These narcissistic people taping themselves over and over again.
And saving it on hard drive. Who are these people?
My favorite one was when they started getting going, and there's one, it's probably still on YouTube, where a guy just took one, turned on the camera, and just hit go and made it fly straight up as high. That's completely illegal now, too. As high as it would possibly go until it just, I think, ran out of batteries, and then it tumbled to Earth, and the whole thing, and he somehow found it again. This was before you could broadcast it back to the, you know, back to your transmitter. And found the GoPro. It was up through the clouds. It was almost into freaking outer space. I guess it ran out of oxygen, couldn't fly any higher. I don't know what happened, but
that's crazy. Yeah.
Well, let's get to you here. So, like I said, so many accolades here, and I appreciate you, me canceling you, and then you canceling me, but now we're making up for it. So it's great. But Joe, you're doing shows all over the world, and your book now. I'm going to show a still of it. Here it is, right here. It's Joe Coy, Mixed Plate, Chronicles of an All-American Combo. And I know you've explained this a million times as to what the title is, but as you say, well, you can explain it to you, but you're half white, you're half Filipino, so go ahead and explain the title there.
Mixed Plate, you know, I'm a big fan of Hawaii, obviously. And, you know, when you go to Hawaii, they have this dish that they serve called Mixed Plate. It's very popular. And it's basically just a dish of food with all different types of ethnicities being represented on the plate. You know, you got a piece of Japanese food on there. They got like teppanyaki on there. That's Japanese. They got Korean barbecue. Then they got a scoop of macaroni salad. That doesn't get any whiter than that. You know, they got a scoop of rice. You know what I mean?
Right.
They throw Spam on there. Like, you know, it's just this big plate of food, and it's all these mixed items, and you know, individually they're all delicious, you know, but you put it on the plate all together and it's even better. And I know that's kind of a weird what is that, analogy, is that what that's called?
Right.
But that's how I feel about me, like all of us together on the same plate is it's beautiful if we're all just together.
And you've kind of had this theme in your act from the beginning, right? Because being a mixed race, an American mixed race, you had to grow up with all kinds of racism and so many stories in the book and things that you tell on stage. And I bought the book, by the way, and I got the, I'm going back to the still here. I got the iPad copy of it right there. And that's why I love this still. Cause it shows them both. So, oh, by the way, I'm impressed with this doesn't even show the entire list. The big deal, people don't know this, when you get a book is the distribution, because it's not going to sell if you don't get it distributed. However you did this is fantastic. I mean, there's Barnes and Noble's, Amazon, BAM, the bookshop, the Philippines fully booked. What is that?
Yeah. Can you believe that? It made its way out to the Philippines on this. Literally, the bookstores are going inside bookstores in the Philippines. So that's a beautiful thing, especially during this time, Jeff. Like, things are not leaving the States right now.
Well,
and
and that's where I want to go a little bit right now is so your act, and I don't want to explain it. Try and explain it better than you, but what I got from watching your stand-up, and is what you talk about, is when you watch your show, you talk about your mom, you talk about your family and your son, and I think you said yourself that you thought you had this very odd family and a weird mother, and it was only you, and then you realize, no, this is a universal subject. It's just mom. It's just, she's a different facade and has a few things that are slightly different than other people. But we all, every race on this planet, everybody has family stories. And and this is what your comedy is, right? And it's why it's so relatable. Am I accurate?
That's 100%. And you know, I always wanted to be able to tell my story without, you know, just singling out Filipinos. Okay, only Filipinos are going to get this. I wanted to be able to tell my mom's story by, like, becoming my mom on stage and then having people relate to my mom just being a mom. And you know, if you tell the honest stories, then people relate more. And I've noticed that. It's like, if I just tell something that happened when I was a kid, I get more DMs or more people walking up to me going, you know, my mom did the same thing to me. And that's what I love the most, man. It has nothing to do with race, Jeff.
And that's why you don't worry about going to other countries, because you know that they're going to get it. And that was my thing. That was the first time we did a world tour. It's giving me goosebumps right now, because I can remember being so frightened about, what am I going to talk to the people in Singapore about? What am I going to talk to the people in South Africa or the Middle East? How are they going to relate to me at all? And then I realized, no, all my stories are about, you know, my comedy, it's about Walter and his wife. It's about divorce. It's about raising kids. And this is, everybody can relate to this stuff. And that's
why.
Yeah. And that's why I think your act is one of those that's universal and it draws people in. And I think you feel good after you've watched you. Because it's a unifying experience. Do you get that from people as well?
Yeah, that's what I love the most. I love it when, you know, one thing people always assume is like, oh, damn, how many Filipinos are in Nashville? It's like, oh, you sold out Nashville? How many Filipinos are? Well, actually, there are none, to be honest. There's none. It's just me. Like, that has nothing to do with how many people are going to come to my show. You know, I'm selling out because people are coming to see me, and it doesn't have to be a particular ethnicity. And that's what I love the most. It's just funny is funny, right, Jeff? Like, if you're funny, people get it, and they're coming.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why, and again, I don't want to go on this tangent, but that's why I used to hate it when people would pick on Carrot Top or whatever prop comics, like, it's not real comedy. I'm like, wait a minute. They're laughing. They're selling out theaters and large venues, and people are loving it. How is this not okay? It's great. People love the comedy.
That's called jealousy. That's what that's called.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That's all that is.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to find an excuse on why they're not selling out big venues, and that's the struggle they're dealing with. If you sit there and say that Carrot Top's not funny, he's hysterical.
Oh my gosh!
I see Carrot Top go up for 20 minutes without a prop. And crush.
Right.
So I really don't understand what they're talking about.
His show in Vegas is unbelievable. We went and saw it when I was there in 2015. I did a residency there for 10 months. And oh my gosh, it was unbelievably great. But let me ask you. Yeah. So what do you think, if you had a signature bit, what is it? If you had to define that this is my comedy, this is my favorite thing, this is what I do. Is there one?
Yeah, there's several. I think Ting Ting was one of my biggest ones about my son and the mysterious green Sharpie when he colored his body parts with it. And he called it his Ting Ting. I mean, to this day, my son's 18 now, and right. People walk up to him and go, oh, is that Ting Ting?
Oh, it's like,
hey man, he's 18 now, okay?
That's great.
He did that when he was like 2, okay? So,
How about the different Asian accents? That's got to be up there, right?
Oh, I love that one because I love the way I did the joke, Jeff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's one where you could just do the accents and, hey, here's a funny joke, but it wasn't about that. I was really trying to find a way to compliment, you know what I mean, who I was talking about.
Right.
You know, give them an identity, something to be proud of. You know what I mean? In no way was I making fun of them.
Right.
And one, educating. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like, you know, I'm teaching you something that you guys really need to learn. And that's what I felt with those jokes.
Well, I can't remember which special it was, but I loved, and we do this in the editing, but they would, whenever you did a joke about whichever ethnicity at the punchline, they would then cut to the crowd shot of that, whatever group that was. It was Japanese or whoever it was, a Korean or whatever.
Yeah.
They would cut to people who they, I guess the director figured must be of that race, and guess who was laughing the hardest? They were.
Yeah, they were. Exactly. And then if you read like the DMs or the comments, yo, it's like so much support. Like, you know what I mean? Like Vietnamese people going, dead on, bro. Thank you so much. So
that's great. And sometimes, I mean? Sometimes the jokes are they're it's all good nature, but sometimes they're not exactly complimentary. But it's okay because it's true.
Yeah. And you got to find the right way to say it and deliver it without being offensive. And I felt I did that on that joke. I felt like I did it the right way.
Yeah. It's learning how to slap a person in a nice way. So, okay. But you've been doing this for a long time and the world is changing in what I think is a terrible way. And with the woke culture and people getting canceled, the fun is going away. And for somebody like me, of course, the white guy, it's really not fun because I can't, you know, it's tough for my core audience. I've talked about this before. This with Russell Peters. With my core audience, I can keep doing what I've always done. But to me, it's not that bad. I don't make fun of people. But I really have to, you know, and I, to this day, right now, I can't think of anything that I couldn't do right now that I did a year or two ago. A few years ago, it's like, oh man, I've grown a little bit, I've learned a little bit. I wouldn't do that again. So it's tough. So are you having to backtrack at all, or do you refuse to, or what's your take on all that? Have you changed anything?
I haven't changed anything, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to, you know, I need to be a little bit more creative, I guess, now, because, you know, there is a sensitive culture out there right now that we got to be aware of, because they're quick to use their Twitter fingers, You know what I mean?
Right. And then what's really irksome is the people that are the most critical are the ones that have seen only snippets and clips. And it's completely taken out of context. They have no idea what your show is. They have no idea who you are as a person because they haven't invested the time to watch. Yep. They see one clip and one person says one thing and then it's pile on.
Yeah. And that's the most annoying. It's like, dude, do your research first, man.
Right.
Learn about somebody before you quickly banish them from existence. That's what we have now. We got people that are just out there willing to just ruin careers without even learning anything about that person.
Sure.
It's getting to know them.
Yeah, it's like it's a hobby.
It's a shame, man.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
So let me talk about the book again a little bit. I noticed that you'd started it a while back, a few years ago, and then finished it up during the pandemic. So is what you ended up with what you started, what your goal was when you started? Did it end up being the same thing, or did you change it along the way?
No, I had a game plan, I guess, and there were stories that I really, really wanted to tell, and I did it, and I'm very proud of it. You know, like talking about my brother, you know, something that, you know, I've neglected to do for so long, you know, just in regular everyday life. I never told anybody I had a brother.
Right.
And this was that opportunity to let the world know just why I felt the way I did and how embarrassed I am for being the way I was. And hopefully with me telling my story, people will relate to it and you know, learn from it as well.
Well, the book is like a movie because it's up and down. You laugh, you cry. It makes you think. So it has all the elements there of a perfect movie. And let's go into that right now. So you're in Toronto. Where are you in Canada?
No, I'm in Vancouver.
Vancouver, the other side. So you're in Vancouver and you're getting ready to start filming next month, correct?
Yeah, man.
So, this is no chump change little movie. So, Steven Spielberg, and what is his part in all this?
Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's nuts. That talk about aliens.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yo, I know exactly that, right? I didn't even really think of that, man. I was like, me and my son were talking about that when we were doing our little alien adventure. We were like, can you believe we signed with the King of Aliens?
Yeah,
Steven Spielberg? Like,
you should buy a crazy. You should buy a tiny bicycle and have him autograph it and just put
Amblin.
Yeah, anyway. So
100.
So is he the what is his title going to be? Executive producer?
Executive producer. He's paying for the whole thing, man. He's amazing. And you know what's crazy, Jeff, is he literally has his hands involved in everything.
So
from
what
the script
and again, so casting. tell everybody what the movie is. What is it?
It's called Easter Sunday. You know, it's based on my family on one day. It's one chaotic day and of everything. Me, my family, the comedy, the chaos, the culture, everything happens in one day on Easter Sunday, and that's what we're gonna portray.
So this was a legit thing that actually did happen on Easter Sunday?
Yeah, this is going to be my interpretation of how my Easter Sundays look.
Oh.
And, so that's what's going to go on here.
And
it's crazy how it all happened. Jeff is, you know, Steven was watching Coming in Hot, the specialized shot in Hawaii.
Right.
And he brought me in for a meeting and asked about a movie idea. I pitched him Easter Sunday and here we are like 9 months later getting ready to shoot it.
It's only been 9 months?
I think so. I think it was like 10 months since the script. Yeah.
That's crazy. Cause these things usually take years.
I know it's nuts, man. It's nuts. And I'm not complaining.
that is fantastic. That's amazing. And how much, who has final say on the script? I mean, you have a lot of input there, right?
Yeah. We have a writer, Ken, Chang, he helped write it. And, but it's based all on my story. It's all on, you know, my ideas, my jokes and everything.
Oh, that's really nice. It's all going to be on location there?
Yeah, all shot here in Vancouver, but it takes place in Daly City. So we're going to go to San Francisco and get some shots there.
So how many times have you actually visited the Philippines?
It would be about 4 to 5 times.
Right.
And the last time is when I shot my special there, my Netflix special there.
So are you a huge, you're obviously a huge hero there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it is one of those, I mean, you're giant. Is that right? Yeah. Right. You can't walk. Yeah, you can't walk anywhere. Say that.
No, but that's great. That, you know what? My whole thing was, you know, Jeff, it's hard to explain being a half white, half Filipino kid in America and wanting to make it in this business and trying to find some type of identity, something that can inspire you. You know what I mean? Like watch TV or go to the movies. And there was never anything that represented my culture or gave me that push. And now that I had that opportunity to open that door, that's what I wanted to do, you know, and that's why I shot that special in the Philippines. I wanted people that lived in America that were Filipino to know that you have a chance and an opportunity. And I wanted to provide that same opportunity for people that lived in the Philippines as well. Put them on the map and show the world that, hey, people in the Philippines speak English and they're loving people and they're entertainers and they're singers and they're dancers. And, you know, just give us a little representation, a little bit of identity. And, you know, and I'm glad I was able to do that. And in doing so, yeah, I've been, you know, people love me for that.
And, what's the Funko Pop. So your Funko Pop, how many of those ended up going down to the Philippines? Do you know?
You know what? I didn't strike a deal with the Philippines on that one.
Aww.
I kept it here. I didn't want to send it to the Philippines. I don't know why. Is that weird?
Yeah.
Is that weird?
You know, you'd kill it there. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
I know. It's weird. I know. I just wanted to keep it here locally. I don't know what it was. I guess make it exclusive or something. So I just kept it in the States.
I forgot,
Jeff Dunham numbers.
Whatever. So I forgot to ask you the distribution of the film. Where's it going to be? Is it going to be theatrical? Is it going to be Netflix? But where?
It's going to be worldwide and it's going to be theatrical release only.
Oh my gosh. You don't get any better than that. That's crazy.
I know. It's crazy to even show you the deal. It's nuts, man. The deal was, you know, Steven has his thing with Netflix. So, you know, you know about that. He's just got this thing against Netflix and, you know, he is all about the theater. He loves theaters and his movies go inside theaters. And that's what he said to me. You know, that's what it says in the contract. This is going to be a theatrical release only.
It's literally you've walked into Oz. It's just nuts. Yeah. And it's not a guy behind the curtain. It's actually Oz.
Yeah. He's the coolest dude, man. I got a letter from him too. And an email from him. And it's just like, I can't wait to frame this email because it was just the way he wrote it was just so amazing. It was like, this email was a movie. Like the way he wrote it was just genius. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. I pinch myself all the time.
That's great. So I don't have many emails that I'm proud of or that amazed me. I'll tell you the one though. When I was getting ready to get my star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, they allow you to invite two celebrities to be there with you. And I thought, well, I'm going to shoot for the moon. And I wrote a letter to Steve Martin. And I said, Steve, they're allowing two guests on the star ceremony at the star ceremony. And I thought I would love to have my comedic idol ever since childhood, since junior high, be there with me. And I thought what an honor it would be. But since Johnny Carson is dead, would you mind coming? All right. And I thought, oh man, do I got a chance at this? And he just wrote it, you know. So the email that I've kept is him saying, no, I'm busy, but thanks anyway.
Is that what he said?
No, it was much nicer than that. But that's basically the email he wrote back. But it was still kind of cool. I had to try.
Oh my. Yeah. Well, you tried the wrong way.
I thought he'd get a kick out of that. But anyway.
Dude, that's so funny.
Yeah, but it ended up being two great guys. It ended up being a Jay Leno and Howie Mandel. So, you know, what the heck.
Who'd you have there? Who was it?
Jay Leno and Howie Mandel. So,
oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, so it was great. Anyway, okay, so you know, you talk about spoiling your son, and I'm just curious because you grew up poor and without a lot. So are you still spoiling him, and is it an issue at this point with him being 17?
No, he's just got a really good head on his shoulders. Like he knows he has like deep pockets, but he doesn't act like it. And he's actually very good about it. And I love it. It's cool. I think his mommy and I did a good job.
Yeah, well, so, you know, you're renting a tour bus and taking him and the cousins to the Grand Canyon. That's not spoiling the kid at all. It's an experience, so it's a good thing, right? But
yeah.
Then there's another video I saw of him driving the Razor, right?
Yeah, it's pretty elaborate. It's pretty intense. It's not hotel rooms. It's like $1 million Airbnbs. It's like it's not a normal vacation. We got a driver that's hired, and then I fly another driver in because I need to get to Sedona faster.
Oh yeah, because the guy has to sleep. But no, you guys just keep going. So how many
we just kept going.
And how many people? How many kids were there total?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There was 7 of us.
And one bathroom on the bus.
Yeah, they're not. They're only allowed to pee on the. You know that.
Oh, of course. Pee on the bus. Yeah, there's no pooping on the bus. However,
no,
depending on which bus you have, you know they've fixed that. There's no more stinky.
Ah, no, I don't care if they fix it. You're not pooping on the bus. You're not pooping on the bus.
But it wasn't even your bus. You rented it, right?
Yeah, but it's now going to be my bus. I'm leasing it for this tour. So.
Oh, so when does the tour start?
Looks like we're starting June. When is yours start?
I'm doing a few shows around the country, during the summer, but then the tour doesn't start till September, October, something like that. And I noticed on your calendar, everything says reschedule. So I didn't look closely. Yeah. Are those dates accurate? It's joecoy.com, right?
Yeah, it's locked and loaded, man. I finally get to play Radio City Music Hall, Jeff.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's really fun. Yeah, did it sell out quickly?
It sold out, 2 years ago. We've been waiting for it.
Oh, no, is that right? Well, you know what's funny is you can sell out Radio City Music Hall. And this is what happened to us because my promoter kept saying, you don't want to play there. I'm like, yeah, I do want to play there. He goes, you're not going to make any money. Yeah. I go, I don't care. But by the time get done with paying the unions and paying all the guys, you can sell it out at a decent ticket price and still lose money.
Yeah, but you know what? It's iconic, man, and we played it, and that's amazing.
Yeah,
you know when I used to go play, what is it called? Carolines. When I used to play Carolines, I used to always walk by Radio City, man, and just look at it. I remember I used to just stare at it, and just in my head, I'm like, I'm gonna play this one day, and that time's finally coming, man. I can't wait.
Well, I don't know if they offer it or if my promoter just came up with it, but make sure they give you the microphone you use on stage there. And
I'm getting that.
Yeah, and I don't know if they do it, but they had it, you know, cased in Lucite for me, so it's this lovely thing. It's in the family room over there, sitting on the. Oh. I don't have many trophies around, but that's one that I kept. That's.
That's awesome! Thank you for telling me.
So when is that? When is it?
It looks like November-ish. November. I don't know the exact date, but
that's
it got
great.
Pushed to November.
That's great.
Isn't that crazy? 2 years it's been sold out.
So Chelsea Handler, I have never met her before. Don't know you know much beyond what is in the media. And again, you were you've been 140 episodes. And did that change the career? Is that something that you wouldn't be where you are had that not happened? Was it that big a thing?
You want to hear what's crazy, Jeff? Is I was supposed to be her sidekick, and I said no to it.
Oh.
So, like, I knew Chelsea. I met Chelsea through John Lovitz. I was opening for John Lovitz, and right. John Lovitz was like, you have to meet Chelsea Handler. She's my only friend on MySpace. And then I went to MySpace, and it was only Chelsea Handler and Tom. And then next thing you know, Chelsea started coming to the shows and opening the shows up, and me and Chelsea just hit it off. We became, like, such great friends, and she pitched that idea to me, and she was just like, I got this deal with E, and we're going to do the show. And I went through every stage, you know, creating and developing and all that. And then all of a sudden, right at the end, I pulled away from it. I said I didn't want to do it. And she cursed me out, man. I wish I would have saved it. But she was like, oh, you – yeah, I don't want to curse, but, you know, F this, F that.
And so she was legitimately angry. She was legitimately angry.
Pissed. Right. She goes, you made the worst effing mistake of your life. Good luck with your effing career.
Oh,
F
no.
This, F that. Oh, yeah. And then slammed the phone on me.
Oh.
And I didn't think – and then I was working at Nordstrom Rack at the time. I was shelving shoes. And then about 7 months later,
Wait a second. Hold on. You were working at Nordstrom's and you turned down being her sidekick. So wait, you skipped over that. So what was the thought process? Why didn't you want to do it?
I used to do that a lot, Jeff. I knew that I did because I knew that I wanted to be known for me and I didn't want to be... You know, if I was going to get something, I wanted it to be my show. And I knew I had the talent to do it. And
that makes, you know, well, that makes sense. That. Yeah.
And, you know, there was this other show that I turned down. And everyone was like, why'd you turn that down? And I was like, because I deserve my own special. I didn't want to be part of a theme special. So I remember turning that down and working at Nordstrom Rack too. And I remember it came on Comedy Central and I was just like, oh, I keep messing up. and then Chelsea's show took off and I remember sitting there with my ex-wife going, oh, I messed up, man. But I knew it was the right decision. And then about 2 months later, she called me and she put me on the show. And next thing you know, she made me a regular. And I was getting more, I was getting booked more than her regular writers, regulars on the show. She would put me on every week. So yeah, and I just love her. We have a chemistry together. You know, to this day, we're still hanging out, you know, and we love each other.
So that drive and that self-confidence, was that developed? Where the heck did that come from? Because, you know, the way you grew up, you'd think it would be the opposite.
Yeah, I knew, Jeff, that if I would have settled with Chelsea, I wouldn't have pursued my stand-up. And I wouldn't have, it just wouldn't have happened. Because I would have been content. I would have been making all that money 5 days a week, you know what I mean? Going to the set and not really thinking about my dream and making my dream happen. I didn't want that. I'd rather be broke and make my dream happen than make that money and letting the dream die. So that was always my mentality. Like, I love stand-up and I was going to make it happen.
So you say that dream, and at what age did you decide this is what I want to do?
11.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. At 11? Because you talk about the place in Las Vegas. And what was the actual what was the actual name of the place?
That I used to rent?
No. Where you first started performing?
The Hunt Ridge Theater.
The what?
It was called the Hunt Ridge Theater. It was an old movie theater.
Yeah.
It's in the... if you want crack cocaine, you go to the Hunt Ridge Theater. It was that bad. And it was on Charleston and Maryland Parkway. It's called the Hunt Ridge Theater. It's starting to pick up now. They're getting some money down there now. But when I rented it, you could rent that theater out for $600. And then I used to sell tickets to that show. And that used to be my first shows.
But where did the stand-up start? And again, my goal in these interviews, Joe, is to not ask a person the same question they've been asked 80 times, because I'm on your end a lot. But this is a basic, so I apologize for this. So where did the stand-up actually start? You said age 11?
Oh, age 11 is when I wanted to be a comic. And that was in Seattle, right? Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm. So when did it actually start? Were you the class clown? Who were you? Wait, hold on. Who were you in high school? I mean, were you shy? Were you popular? What?
I was popular because I was funny, but no one wanted to date me. But everyone wanted to sit by me because I was funny. So I was the funny guy. Yeah, I was a class clown every year, Jeff.
Did you get any, like, most likely to be arrested or most likely to succeed or most likely anything?
No, not most likely to succeed, that's for sure. But definitely class clown. Definitely class clown.
Wow.
I used to impersonate John Lovitz in high school. So it's so weird that he's like one of my best friends. I told him that too. I go, you know what's weird, man, is I'm talking to the guy I used to impersonate in high school.
but were you in talent shows, or are you just the class clown, or did you actually get up and perform?
I would perform, but never do stand up. It would always be like dancing, or, you know, it would be Michael Jackson impersonations was my big thing. So that was always, that was my first love to the stage.
And was that the evening at the Apollo thing with the hiccups where what is it? Michael Jackson has hiccups, and who else? Yep. Some of the other artists that I'm not familiar with that you talked about at the Apollo.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's a crazy gig, that Apollo, man. I won that, by the way, Jeff.
I know you won it, and you also said it was your most terrifying night. Why? Why was it terrifying?
The most because that was the original Apollo. Like, that's before it became Hollywood Apollo. This was Harlem Apollo.
Where you had to rub the stone. You had to rub the stone in the whole bit, that thing?
Rub the stone. That's where they booed Lauryn Hill. That's where they booed Luther Vandross. Like, you think they cared about some half-white, half-Asian guy? Hell no. They wanted to boo right when they saw me. So, winning that was the most terrifying night of my life. I remember the producer goes, "Are you ready?" And I go, "No, I'm not. I want to go home." I was so scared.
But it's a matter of literally the way the temperature of the room could be in the moment, where if you've got a handful of people, this is how I say that audiences work. You have to have X number of laughers in there for it to catch on. And then it's like wildfire. Yep. It catches on. Somebody laughs. Everybody else laughs. That's why they have laughers in sitcoms, hired laughers. So I would imagine that at the Apollo, that the booing is in getting kicked off stage is the same thing. It's this herd mentality. Yeah. So how
long? It's their goal to boo. Like, all they think about is booing all week. I can't wait to get to Showtime at the Apollo because I got my boos ready.
And how long did you have before? I guess there's no grace period. So how long was it before you really had them? In that night,
I got them right when I walked out.
What'd you do?
You know what's crazy is underneath. You know the green room where they put all the talent is underneath the stage.
Oh no!
So a lot of people don't know that you literally go underneath the stage, and that's where all of the amateurs sit, and you hear them so every time they would bring an amateur upstairs, they would leave and go upstairs, and then you can hear them get booed. And then they come back downstairs. It was like Gladiator. It was the most horrific thing. Like, and each time someone get booed, we'd all look at each other like, "I don't want to go out there. Do you want to go out there?" So the guy that went up before me, he got booed. The other comedian, he got booed before me. And I'm just like, what is going on? I do not want to go out there right now.
And how long, would these, I guess, mainly guys, how long would they last? Before, I mean, literally, would it be like 10 seconds, 30 seconds?
Yeah, he got booed. He got booed his first joke. So like 30 seconds in, they were already booing him. And it's always that one guy from way in the back. The guy that goes like this, "Boo!" And then next, it's like, "Boo, boo, boo!" And it's just like, oh my God.
So what was the, what? What was
when you watch it on TV, you laugh and have a good time, like, "Ah, yeah, that guy got booed." But when you're part of the competition, mm-mm, you don't want the guy in front of you to get booed because you're like, "Oh, they're gonna boo me." So like, you feel sorry for him. You're like, "Oh my God, they're booing him." So it's a mind trip, man. It really messes with your mind.
So what did you do? Fun. What was your opening 30 seconds?
I can't remember, man. I gotta watch it.
Can you find? Is it on YouTube? Where the heck do you see it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's on YouTube.
Okay. But, now I gotta go see it.
Yeah. It's of course it's the easiest stuff you could think of. When I got that show, I was like 3 years into stand up, or 4 or 5 years, like maybe 5 years tops. In the stand-up.
So what is it, McDonald's jokes and airline jokes? Gee, is it that?
Oh,
kind of,
yeah, yeah.
No, it's not.
Asian jokes and stuff like that. Michael Jackson.
It is so funny to me how, I don't know how this race thing works, because there's no way I could come close to doing anything, any of your material. I would be canceled and kicked off the planet. And yet, you know, guys like you and Russell Peters get up there, and you know, you're not 100% Filipino. You're half white, and you can still do this. It's just so crazy. I think it's great. Again, I think it's so sad what's happening now, that so many guys are getting canceled and women are getting canceled because of one joke on one thing that they say, and everybody feels like they have to really be careful. And I wonder, I ask everybody this, when is this going to end? Is it going to end? Is it going to change? Is it going to turn around? Is it going to slap back?
I say this at every single interview. Just watch Sticks and Stones by Dave Chappelle. And he's amazing. He's the light, because he's the one that's fighting cancel culture as we speak. And he crushed it. He got an Emmy for that damn special. So,
all right.
You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, if no one's ever seen, go watch that special and follow the leader, man, because he's what he did in that special is crazy. You know, everyone's scared to talk about this or talk about that. And David went out there and talked about all of it and crushed it.
And it's on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah.
Sticks and Stones. Okay. I will Sticks absolutely Stones. All right, I'll absolutely do that.
You know what's crazy, Jeff? Jeff, I flew out to Ohio, Yellow Springs, and did, you know, his shows out in the cornfield.
And, oh, you did?
Yeah, it was like Tiffany, you know, me and Tiffany are like best friends, right?
Right.
And Tiffany has like a jet, you know, and she's flying out to Yellow Springs, and she's like, come with me to Dave's. I'm like, all right. Next, you know, I'm with Dave and backstage, and I'm going out on stage in this cornfield. It's amazing. It was right. The most amazing experience. But as it's happening, backstage, he's winning his Emmys for Sticks and Stones. It was the most surreal moment. It was so crazy.
Wow.
So you hear them screaming backstage, like, yeah! And he won two Emmys that night. And, you know, Stan Latham, he won his directorial Emmy, the first one ever that he's ever won. And that was a historic moment, but it was just a surreal moment to be a part of that.
So I always like asking everybody the biggest, the best moment and the worst moment. And it can be, a career step or a stumble on your own or life just hit you, whatever it was. But let's talk about the first one. So if is there that pivotal moment that had this not happened, you wouldn't be where you are? Is there a performance or is there a decision? What is that moment in your life that you know there's a parallel universe where you went the other direction and you are not where you are now?
It was my decision to not listen to Netflix when they told me no on my special. When they turned me down for my first special live from Seattle, I decided to go shoot it myself. And then it was so funny, Jeff, because when I shot it, they made sure to call us. They called the team and they were like, hey, we heard you're still shooting your special. We just want you to know that we're still not interested.
What?
So
why would they do that?
Because I think they thought that, and I understand where they're coming from. You know, they said no, and I wanted to be like, well, let me shoot it and show you. And they wanted to make sure that there was no responsibility behind it. Like, hey, look, we're totally cool with you shooting it, but we also want you to know that we're not interested. We don't want to have any obligation to it. And I get it.
Right.
But imagine that kind of pressure on me, knowing that all this money I'm spending on this special, knowing that the only person I wanted to sell it to, which was Netflix, is saying no confidently. Like, right. No, we don't want it. It was the biggest gamble of my life.
And then what happened?
Especially then, because there's no platforms out there. Like, who else is going to play that and, sure. and give me the audience that I needed, you know? And I wanted that Netflix audience. And we shot it. And I remember when we edited it, when we cut it up, right when we were done editing it, I go, dude, we got ourselves a special here, man.
Right.
like, they're stupid if they don't buy it. And we brought it to Netflix, and it was so funny, Jeff, because they said, we're done for 2017. We have no room. We bought all the specials that we want. And and we shot it. We sent it to them. And then they called us right back, and they were like, hey, don't shop that around. We want it, and we're going to put it on our 2017 schedule. So even though they said there was no room for it, they made room for it.
Yeah.
That changed my life.
No shame. and that changed it, and that catapulted it. So
change my life.
All right. Then what's the low point in life where you thought, I don't know if I can go on, or career, life or career, where I don't know if I can keep going here, or, you know, this isn't working out the way I planned. Is there a moment like that?
It was me not getting Montreal again.
And what year was that?
I wanted to quit.
The Montreal Comedy Festival. And what year was that?
I think it was like 2004. They turned me down again. What, and I had my son. I just had my son. He was a year old. My mom's harping down my neck, just telling me to go get a full-time job, get insurance. You have a son. You're being irresponsible. You can't keep doing this comedy when you got a kid. And, you know, and then Montreal turned me down again.
So again,
I'm like, now I got to wait.
So again, I want to go back to that. Then where did that confidence come from? Where did that push? Where did that drive come from? With even your mother telling you to get a job, is it just that inner voice in you? What gave you the confidence to know that you could keep going after your dreams?
Because I knew I was funny. I knew I had it. I knew I was talented. I see all these comedy specials and I'm like, yeah, I have that special. I'm equal to these people. So why am I going to quit? And I didn't understand it. And I just had to figure out a way to make extra money. That's when I went and bought, I went to Fry's Electronics. God, rest in peace. Those are all closed now.
Yep.
I went to Fry's Electronics and bought a bunch of DVD burners. And I remember making a fake DVD and burning them all. And I was like, I'll sell them for $5 a pop.
Yep.
That'll buy diapers. I'm good. So I dug deep that way. I was about to quit. Just for Laughs didn't want to bring me out again, and I needed extra money, and that was my way of making extra money, were those DVDs.
But again, if you go back to that person that's inside you, it's you had that drive there, you wanted to, but does that confidence in yourself, it has to go back somewhere. It has to go all, you know, I look at mine from elementary school in the neighborhood I grew up with. And it was that when I did my first little book report in the third grade with a dummy, I got laughs. And I remember standing in line to go out to the playground and turning to one of my friends and saying, did it really sound like the dummy was talking? And the guy goes, yeah, sure it did. And it was
that's so cool.
Yeah. And it was just those friends around me and the fact that I didn't get beat up on the playground. But my parents were very supportive, and I think that gave me that sense of I can do this, I can do this. So can't you point back to, you know, okay, in 03 you were pushing it, you knew you wanted to do it, but again, where did that drive come from? Did it come from being a class clown and getting laughs and knowing you were funny then?
God, I don't know. I just knew I didn't want to give up. I swear. And you know, Filipinos, especially my mom, that generation, it's all about do not follow your dreams. Talent will get you nowhere. Like, it's all about college. It's all about nursing. It's like, that's what I was dealing with. You know, my mom was all about go to school and get a degree so you can get a higher paying job. Like, it was so annoying because maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was me, like, fighting against my mom just to prove her wrong. You know what I mean?
Isn't that funny?
That's where I got it.
I wonder if that's a cultural thing. That's a cultural thing, obviously, because my thing with my kids have always been find your muse, find that thing that you want to do and do it better than anyone else.
Yes.
And even if it's a crazy dream, just run after that and push. And everything you think about, it find that passion. And, and there are a handful of people in this world that are able to do that. And, but I just think that's so important. But then what your mom's saying, that makes perfect sense as well. There's the practical thing of just get a job
yeah.
and support your family.
Get a job. Yeah, especially stand-up comedy. You know, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's like, yeah, I can see where my mom's coming from. You want to tell jokes for the rest of your life? No, right. That doesn't make sense. And she was enticing me too. She bought me a brand new car, you know, so I could have a nice car for my son. And, you know, she made it very comfortable for me. But I still refuse to listen to her.
Well, yeah. And people ask me, they said, you know, with my daughters, they're all grown now, all grown women. But my boys are 5.5-year-old twin boys. And people say, you're going to encourage them to do the ventriloquist. And I'm no.
Yeah, no.
Because the odds of success are ridiculous. And being in comedy, the odds of success are equally ridiculous. It's just like, forget it. No, do not be in show business. Find anything else.
Yeah.
But if they want
can
to,
I
will support them.
I hate to interrupt you because I want to tell you another thing that I do, Jeff, is, you know, I find that in this business that a lot of people look at other people's success and get jealous. And then they quickly hate on that person that's blowing up. So they want to, you know, give everybody a reason why they're blowing up. You know what I mean? Oh, the reason why he's blowing up is because of this and that. Right. They don't want to give them the props or learn from that person. So I'm going to give you what happened to me in about 2005-ish or 2006. I can't remember what year it was. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what year it was, but it was you at the Gibson Theater, right? You're at the Gibson?
You're the guy who sent that pipe bomb.
Were you at? No, were you at the Gibson?
At the Gibson Theater. I have been there. I don't remember. You're asking me to remember what
Gibson
show.
You're at the Gibson Amphitheater, and my son was a huge fan of yours.
Wait. That's the one at Universal? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
so
sure. Absolutely.
My son, for Christmas, I bought my son every single Jeff Dunham puppet, right? Aww. We still have it. It's in the garage. Aww. It's in the garage, so I need you to sign those, by the way. Okay. And they're in the garage. I'm going to put it up next to my bar. And the reason why is, like, you know, I can see how, like, being an up-and-coming comic, getting turned down from all these, you know, Just for Laughs and all that. And then here's my son, huge Jeff Dunham fan. I'm buying him these DVDs of you and buying him all the puppets. I can see how that can mess somebody's brain up. Like, what am I doing wrong? Like, my son doesn't like me. Just for Laughs doesn't like me. But it wasn't that. I remember watching you and just going, I can do this, man. You know, Jeff has shown me that it is possible to play big venues like this and to create a fan base, and people are in love with this guy, and I know I can do it. And I swear to God, that it was motivation for me. Well, taking my son to that show motivated me.
Well, I appreciate that very much. You know, it is an odd business when nobody really loves you or respects you. And, you know, I never had any real troubles in life. I didn't have to grow up with anything like you did with the racism, and some of the stories in the book are just heartbreaking. But it is interesting when you come to Hollywood and, you know, you get no respect as a stand-up comic because you have a prop, you have a dummy. And I appreciate that very much what you said, but I think the only reason I'm getting any respect now is just because of the longevity and the fact that, you know, I've treated it like a business and just treat the fans as if they're family and, give them, I like to look to Steve Jobs. It's like, he gave everybody what they wanted and then created things that they didn't know they needed. And I think that's the same way with a show. You go in there and you give them what they want, what they're expecting, and then you add X amount of, I didn't see this coming, and now we got to come back again to see what else is going to be new. And and you know, I see that, and I'm so delighted when I watch your stuff because it is so, you're so approachable and one of those performers. I always judge a performer, would I want to sit down and have a drink with that person and just chat with them? And you're one of those guys, one of those comics that you think, you probably get this all the time. It's the same with Fluffy, with Gabe, where people just walk up to him like they know him and just start chatting because you seem like a guy that is on stage who you would be in person. And I found that in these chats, and I think that's one of your reasons for success. It's got to be the reason Spielberg, nabbed you. It's great.
Yeah, that's so cool. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Yes, please, let's have that drink.
Yeah, it's a good idea. That'd be great. Yeah, student, this, have you had your shot? You got your vaccination, right?
Yeah, yep.
Which one did you get?
Johnson.
The Johnson one. Oh, that's good. So you didn't have a stroke or anything, so you're fine.
No, I'm good. They actually call it Janssen. I didn't even know that.
So Johnson & Johnson is Janssen. I know. I got the little thing on my text that said, you have the Janssen vaccine. I went, no,
yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, it's actually called Janssen. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I use their shampoo. I use their shampoo, and okay, never mind. Well, Joe, this has just been a delight. And real quick, and again, I don't want to ask questions everybody have. Explain your name real quick. Can you do that real quick, this story, because it's not your real name.
Oh, Joe Coy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, it's so funny because I, when Coming in Hot came out, my second special,
right?
I was getting all these interviews, you know, people ask me, hey, why do they call you Joe Coy? And I was like, I went to my aunt because my aunt's the one that gave me the nickname, but I never knew why she gave me that nickname. Like, why did she call me Joe Coy? I don't get it. And I go at the Evelyn. Everyone's asking me why you call me Joe Coy. Like, what is it? What's the reason for that nickname? And then she's like, I don't call you Jokoi. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? She goes, I don't call you Jokoi. You're the one that calls yourself Jokoi. I've never, ever called you Jokoi. I'm like, you're kidding me. What are you talking about? Like, you always call me Jokoi. I don't call you Jokoi. You're the one that calls yourself Jokoi. And then I'm like, well, what do you call me? And then that's when she told me that your nickname is Joko. My nickname is Joko. There's no why. She goes, I don't know why you call yourself Jokoi. I don't even know why. Every time I watch the specials coming to the stage, Jokoi. I'm like, who's that? I don't even call him that. And I'm like, well, why haven't you told me this? It's been 30 years. You should have told me this 30 years ago. She goes, I don't know. You decided to do it. I'm like, what? Your nickname is Joko. Ko. In Tagalog means my. You're my Joe. That's your nickname. My Joe. Joko. I'm like, oh my God, dude.
That's fantastic.
Literally just found that out.
Well, isn't look, all right. So the Koi Pond, the podcast, and your movie's coming out. When's it going to be released? Do you know?
Easter Sunday.
It really is going to be Sunday. So a year from April, right?
Yeah.
A year from this That's month. It. Wow.
Yep.
That is such a crazy thing. It's just unbelievable. It's great.
It's so cool.
Man, well, it's congratulations. So that's absolutely amazing. I don't think Steven Spielberg is going to be, you know, there's a guy that got a dummy. He was in the third grade. He became a great ventriloquist. That's not a movie.
You got to come up with an alien character. Is Peanut an alien?
We don't know. I don't know what he is. He's like Gonzo on the Muppets. You know, I used to say he was a woozle, but it was back in, that's a Winnie the Pooh thing. Woozles and Heffalumps, but I don't say that anymore. I don't know what he is.
I think you should make an alien.
Nice.
Make an alien character, man.
Then maybe Spielberg would pay attention. Yeah, that'll work. All right. Well, Joe, again, thank you. Congratulations on all your success. We look forward to the film Easter Sunday and the book right now. And I'll put a picture of it again real quick. Here it is. There it is. Jokoi Mixed Plate. Yes. You can get it on all those places right there. Barnes & Noble. It's a real book. Or you can download it on ebooks. What's it called? Just books on Apple. Books. Whatever. And can you get it on Kindle? Kindle as well, I bet, right?
Everything, yeah. Okay. Barnes & Noble, everything. Amazon Books, Apple Books, everything.
Perfect.
It's available everywhere.
All right. Well, it's a good read.
Yeah.
Thanks for the time, my friend.
Jeff, you have to sign those all the dolls.
Well, you signed my Bible, I'll sign your dolls.
Okay, cool.
All right, man.
I love you.
Take care.
You're the best.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, we're back. That was a great interview. Yeah, it was. He hadn't done it yet, but it was genius. Thanks. Yeah.
Best one yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think we're supposed to act like we saw it.
Yeah, you're supposed to pretend that Jeff did a good job and that Joe Coy's a good guy, but the interview is not taking place yet, so we don't know. No, but yeah. But thanks for watching or listening. Oh, yeah, there's a podcast thing. They're listening as well. Great. So, Walter, we have you here today. Do you know why?
I guess I'm supposed to introduce a clip, and you guys know which one it is, correct?
Yes.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. This is the one where it's the introduction to a relative disaster.
That was our special that we shot in 2016?
15.
Wow. No.
17,
yeah, because the boys were born in 15 and they were the backseat of the car.
That's right. Yeah.
They were there.
So this is little Jack and James, and they're tiny.
Yeah, and I'm in the car with them, along with Audrey. Yeah.
I love this introduction, Matt. You did an amazing job with the graphics and everything. It's a lot of fun. But we chose this one.
Yeah, and this is the first clip that we've done like this that hasn't specifically been stand-up. This is the first little narrative clip that we've had.
Yeah, and I love this one because, as you pointed out, Jokoi is all about family, and he's an international comedian, and that's what this was. This was me trying to find my roots. Going back to Ireland, and that's what the special was all about.
Oh, it's so sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here we go.
Thanks, guys. Good seeing you again.
All right.
I don't
Great
care.
To see you, Walter.
Shut up. Okay.
Okay.
So we're driving to the show?
Yep.
With the wife?
And the kids.
Hi, Jack. Hi, James. Remind me again why we're doing this?
This Ireland trip is about the family being together and discovering our roots.
Thanks, sweetie.
Well, I just discovered I don't want to go.
Walter, you're part of this family whether you like it or not.
Hey, look what I found smushed under the seat. This old unopened letter to you, Walter, dated 1960. Oh. Hey, Audrey, what's this extra baby seat for when Bubba J passes out?
What the hell?
You'll see.
You'll see? What does that mean?
What is this?
Another baby? Speaking of Bubba J, has anybody seen him lately?
Oh, he wanted to ride on the roof.
I'm making a left turn!
Well, we're here.
Well, we must be in Ireland. These bugs taste like beer.
Well, that's it for this week. Be sure and join us next week for our next podcast.
Oh, is it going to be next week?
It always is.
Okay, good. Yeah, you can get your Apple podcast or your favorite podcast provider. No one knows, no one cares.
Watch it on YouTube or on Facebook.
Oh, great. Yay. See it everywhere.
Yeah. Be sure and subscribe, like, and comment.
And also hit the notifications bell. And by the way, why the hell are you guys here?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
No one knows.
We can't leave?
No one cares. Fine.